Welcome to Radio Shedworking, the podcast for everybody who works in a garden office or other shed-like atmosphere. Today, we're focusing on our favourite garden office, that belonging to George Bernard Shaw, who wrote Pygmalion and Major Barbara in a hut built in 1906 by Stawsons. It had a revolving base which used casters on a circular track. The hut, at his home in Shaw's Corner, Ayot St Lawrence in Hertfordshire, could thus be moved to improve the light or change the view, or indeed, just for a bit of exercise. Spectacularly high-tech for its time, it also had an electric heater and a telephone connection to the house, as well as an alarm clock to alert the Nobel Prize winner to lunchtime. Shaw particularly enjoyed the isolation, since it allowed the staff at the house to prevent interruptions by honestly informing callers that Mr. Shaw is out. He called it London for the same reasons. I'm sorry, sir, Mr. Shaw is in London. Nancy Astor apparently once banged on the door saying, "Come out of there, you old fool, you've written enough nonsense in your life." Shaw's hut continues to be an inspiring shed-working atmosphere, providing the model for the beautiful retreat in the Real Life by Brett Garden, designed by Geoffrey Whiten at the 2008 Chelsea Flower Show. There were many famous visitors to George Bernard Shaw's hut, not least of whom was James Lees Milne, the National Trust's country house expert. He wrote about it in his famous diaries, about the visit that he took to Shaw's Corner in February 1944. Here is an excerpt. "Having looked upstairs at the house, we descended. He tripped going down, and I was afraid he was going to fall headlong. He then said, 'We will go out to look at the curtilage.' It was fearfully cold by now, and raining heavily. He put on a long, snow-white mackintosh and chose a stick. From the hall hat rack, hung with a variety of curious headgear, he took an archaic rough felt hat of a buff colour, high in crown and wide of brim. In this garb, he resembled Carlyle, and was the very picture of the sage, striding forth, a little wobbly and bent perhaps, pointing out the extent of the curtilage, and the line of the hedge which he had de-rooted with his own hands to lengthen the garden. The boundary trees of spruce were planted by him. 'Trees grow like mushrooms in these parts,' he said. We soon came to a little asbestos-roofed summer-house that revolves on its own axis. Here he also writes and works. There was a little table, covered with writing material, and a couch. The summer house was padlocked. I said, 'Do you sit out here in the winter, then?' 'I have an electric stove,' he said, and pointed to a thick cable attached to the summer house from an iron pylon behind it. 'This will be an attraction to the birthplace if it survives,' he said. We passed piles of logs, which he told me he had chopped himself, and he showed me his and his wife's initials carved on the coach house door and engraved on a glass pane of the greenhouse. Took me into the coach house, where there are three cars under dust sheets, one a Rolls Royce. 'When I want to use this,' he said, 'I become very decrepit, and the authorities allow me coupons.' We continued down the road." And that's it for this issue of Radio Shedworking. I hope you can join us again next week.